We're speaking to Rob Carr. Rob's the president and CEO of the Illinois Retail Merchants Association. Rob, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
Thank you so much for joining me. I know that the Supreme Court and your organization has been lobbying for a long time about the issue of brick-and-mortar sales versus internet sales and what your group views as was being the inherent unfairness of the taxes that brick-and-mortars have to pay versus internet sellers. And now we have this ruling from the Supreme Court. Does this satisfy those concerns?
It does, Rick. It's a tremendous sea change that the court instituted with their Wayfair decision last week. It does level that playing field. It removes the disparity that has existed between remote sellers and Main Street, what we call Main Street or brick and mortar retailers, who have physical presence in the state. And no longer, it would appear, will the tax code be used to discriminate against two actors doing the same thing in the marketplace.
There is still the issue, though, and I think this was kind of the compounding of it, was the lack that sales taxes weren't collected, as well as the fact that the brick and mortars have to do everything like pay property taxes and those kinds of things.
Right. So what you have is you had a, maybe to catch the listeners up a little bit, you had a 1967 decision called Bella Hess, actually, versus the Illinois Department of Revenue. And that was affirmed and clarified a bit with a 92 decision called Quill. And what those decisions in their combination essentially found was that unless you had a physical presence in the state of Illinois, or in a state, you did not were not required to collect and remit their sales tax. Of course, as we all recognize, those were all pre-internet, pre-digital age decisions. Clearly, right after the Quill, the internet started to come on strong, and it's interesting to note, and the justices noted it in their decision, that in 92, when this was decided, mail order was $180 billion.
Yeah.
By 2018, e-commerce alone was over $450 billion. So, you know, they could not have anticipated nor predicted where that was going. And the court invited this this review, if you will. A couple of justices were giving speeches suggesting that it was time to review Quill. So South Dakota put in place a law that they knew to be unconstitutional in light of the Quill precedent to invite this kind of a review, and we were fortunate enough that the court undertook it.
Now, as far as Illinois, and there have been estimates, I guess, about maybe this would mean $150 million more to the state of Illinois, maybe $200 million. And in fact, there seems to be some question about whether the state had already, the legislature in passing the budget had already accounted for that revenue. But is it necessarily, I mean, when most people think of e-commerce, they think of Amazon. And by virtue of the fact that Amazon had established warehouses throughout the state, that they were collecting sales tax. So,
yeah, it is not fair to call the tax the Amazon tax. Amazon, as you noted, has a physical presence in the state of Illinois and triggered collection. But Amazon also, to their credit, several years ago, voluntarily collected and remitted taxes everywhere, whether or not they had a physical presence. So they have been and have become a good actor in the space. But there are many others that took advantage of the Quill decision to essentially carve out for themselves a significant competitive advantage. And as the justices noted in their decision several times, the tax code should apply uniformly to people doing the same thing in the marketplace. In this case, they're all selling goods and services, and they should be collecting and remitting the sales tax in those jurisdictions for doing that same thing. The sales tax code should not be a competitive advantage or disadvantage, depending on your outlook, for similar actors. And I think it's important for the listeners to know as well, Rick, because this gets lost a lot. This isn't a new tax. This is a tax that has always been due and owing. And when the internet sellers don't collect it, it falls upon the consumer to have to pay it. And if they don't pay it and get caught not paying it, they're on the hook for the interest and penalties. So to a great degree, this also helps protect consumers should they just because of the transaction, now the taxes collected the transaction. To the state of Illinois, we were successful in putting in the budget the identical South Dakota language. So Illinois is well positioned vis-a-vis this court decision. I believe the budgeteers had an effective date of October 1st and an estimated $150 million. That's three quarters of a fiscal year, so they're looking at $200 million. We think that number's a little light, but it's certainly a defensible number for their purposes. So that is where we sit with the state today.
And as you point, I mean, under the was the use tax that you were, as a consumer, supposed to pay if sales taxes weren't collected, but the onus was on you. And, of course, we know how difficult that was going to be for Department of Revenue to find that out. So it kind of standardizes things very, very much across the board.
Yeah, it really does. It does.
We're speaking with Rob Carr. He's president and CEO of the Illinois Retail Merchants Association. I'm Rick Pearson. This is your Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Skyline Studio. I knew I was going to mess it up one of these times, the Allstate Skyline Studio. I'm speaking to Rob Carr, president and CEO of the Illinois Retail Merchants Association. We've been talking about Supreme Court's ruling on a collection of state collection of sales taxes on internet sales, but I wanted to shift, Rob, to another issue that we've been talking about this morning, and that's the issue of the increase in the minimum wage to $12 an hour in Chicago and some other suburban Cook County communities. And it moves to $12 today, jumps to $13 an hour next year. You still have groups like my previous guest from the Service Employees International Union Healthcare saying the fight for 15 continues. What's the lay of the land as far as minimum wage, as far as the Retail Merchants Association?
Well, I mean, we, as you know, it's been no secret, we've always opposed these types of approaches. It is significant. These next two increases in the city of Chicago and are significant in that they jump by a dollar. You know, it's a different approach. We have a concern of businesses and employers at heart when we talk about these things. It's one place when the marketplace establishes it. It's another when government creates an artificial imposition. And, you know, I don't begrudge the unions their approach, but frankly, their concern is not necessarily the worker in the retail store. It is what they can win through government that they are not able to win through contract negotiations. And so it's just a different approach, but it is a significant increase for retail. I think what is important to note is that many people don't notice it if you spend most of your time in the Loop area of the Central Business District, in great part because of the concentration of wealth there, in another part because of the significant and sustained effort that Mayor Emanuel has put into tourism. You know, we're at historic levels. As long as you can sustain those types of levels, it softens the blow. But when you get onto the neighborhoods, when you get onto border areas, it is a completely different story. And, you know, they talk about minimum wage increases as if that is the only thing that's occurring. Our messaging has long been, look, if it was just by itself, it's probably not that big of a deal. But when you pile on everything else, it's a big deal. And it's not just what Chicago does or what Cook County does or what the state does or the federal government. It's what they all do in the aggregate, because that's the way a business views it and that's the way they pay it.
So it's one part of a kind of a comprehensive assessment on business.
It is. It's, you know, they don't look at it and say, oh, okay, the city just did this, so that's okay. They have one pocket. They have one source of revenue. They have, you know, expenses that come out of that revenue, and so they have to look at it and do look at it in the aggregate. So when one or more decides to significantly increase the property tax, when one or more decides on different, you know, locals put on additional sales taxes, someone else does paid leave, someone else does restrictive scheduling so that you can no longer schedule your employees the way you need to, the way your business requires you to. All of those add significant costs in the aggregate, and that's how businesses look at it.
Well, Rob, I thought it was curious when you mentioned about, you know, like downtown and strong tourism, those kinds of things. But there's also the people that work downtown every day. And it's they're not getting, I mean, yes, overall the city is getting the benefit of the wealth of tourism, which is a good thing, but it's not like, say, the state of Florida, where tourism basically helps subsidize a state that doesn't have an income tax.
Right, and that's why I talked, when I mentioned the concentration of wealth. You have that concentration of wealth of people coming in and out of the loop and working every day, and most of the tourism comes to that general loop area, right? It is not, as it is in Florida, more widespread and benefiting everywhere. And so that's where this disparate impact, it's softened in the city of Chicago, and certainly in the central part of the city of Chicago, if you will. But again, you get out into the neighborhoods, you get out into the border wards, and aldermen will talk to you about you know, how business has closed and literally moved a block, two or three, right over the border to avoid these kinds of substantial increases. Anytime you take, as this next step does, it's a 9% increase in your largest or second largest cost item, it's a big consideration for you to take. And you know, businesses are going to locate where they can get the best return on their investment because they have to be able to afford you know, their business operation. They have to be able to afford to pay their employees and their benefits. And frankly, they want to make a little profit as well. So those are important considerations for them. And they're not unaware and uninformed, I might add, of the other pressures are coming. They know there's an assessor out there talking about how he doesn't think that businesses pay enough in property tax, despite the fact in Cook County they pay 2.5 times more than residential. They know there's significant pension obligations coming due at the city, the county, and the state level, and other fiscal problems that are likely going to have them looking to businesses to pay even more taxes. So when you add all of that together, Rick, in the aggregate, they're extraordinarily concerned.
Rob, we have a call from Tom with a question going back to that issue about internet sales taxes. Tom, sure. Welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Well, my question would be an extension, and it relates to the proper areas where one might be sued in connection with an interstate agreement. Usually it's the location where a defendant lives or where some parts of the transaction arose. But you could find that you're doing business with somebody in another country and wind up being sued under those principles in that other country because that's where some part of the transaction was.
Okay.
I had a client walk some gold from the jeweler in New York who has no presence in Illinois. It didn't turn out to be what the jeweler represented it to be, so the man filed in Page County. I moved to dismiss because
Tom, I think we've got the issue. I'm sorry, we're running short of time. So, Rob, I mean, I don't know how does that even get addressed?
Well, I don't know that it does. I'd have to review that, but I don't know that the court's decisions have any impact on international transactions.
Right.
And certainly I
would think that would be a determination through Department of Revenue as well.
Correct. Correct. And that gets into more than just straight. It sounds like it gets more into apportionment issues as opposed to straight tax issues.
Correct. Correct. Rob Carr, President and CEO of the Illinois Retail Merchants Association. Thank you so much, as always, for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Rick, always a pleasure. Stay cool.
You too.